Hi, this is Nancy Clare. Welcome to episode 103 of Speaking of Mysteries. My guest is James L'Etoile, whose debut crime fiction novel, At What Cost, is being published on December 13th, 2016. Like most fans of crime fiction, I'm always on the lookout for writers to add to my reading rotation. A lot of people wait for the new installments from Lee Child and Michael Connelly that come out about once a year, and rightly so. But they are only human and can only write so fast. That's why there's always room for more crime fiction writers, and I think readers will enjoy Jim L'Etoile's At What Cost, a procedural that's pacing and characters are in the tradition of Michael Connelly. Here's Jim L'Etoile. Welcome back to Speaking of Mysteries. My guest today is James L'Etoile, who has just published his first crime fiction novel. And so I want to congratulate him on the publication, because it must be an incredible moment to see the book, like, in the flesh.
It sure is, Nancy. It's been quite a process, but I've enjoyed it.
It's not easy to get a book published, and when you do, there's just a thrill, I think, that a lot of people don't understand when you actually physically hold it in your hand and it's got your name on it, and it's just a wonderful, wonderful feeling. So, congratulations.
Thank you very much.
When I read a book, I can't help but look for an underlying theme or motif, and in At What Cost, the issue of trust seems to run through the story. In the professional life of your protagonist, Detective John Penley of the Sacramento, California Police Department, it's trust between him and his new partner, who's a transfer from Internal Affairs. And in Penley's personal life, his trust is relying on the sanctity of the medical establishment that's involved in the United Network for Organ Sharing and the Organ Procurement and Transplantation Network. Did you go into this project with this dramatic tension in mind?
It kind of unfolded that way. Early on, I saw trust and betrayal as kind of two major factors that would kind of play against each other throughout the book. But, yeah, the trust, bringing on a new partner, particularly in Paula's case, who had, you know, some baggage, some would call it, from Internal Affairs, and putting those two together, it kind of rolled out that way, and trust ends up being a major theme throughout the book.
Because John Penley's trust is sorely tested from even some unexpected sources, and I don't want to introduce any spoilers, but, you know, his trust is betrayed and upheld by unexpected people. And I found that really, really an interesting, it's one of the things that sort of kept me going through the book was, you know, what is John, sort of like, well, what's John going to do now?
Yeah, we drag John through the knothole of trust here through the book. And you're right. You know, he doesn't know where to turn. And yeah, things kind of happen that influence his change of belief, I guess you could say, over the course of this story.
And I'm also interested. I mean, you know, I was wondering what made you write a story that dealt with the dual pressures of work and home for Detective Penley. Obviously, law enforcement is there's a lot of pressure in law enforcement, but Penley's not a beat cop. He's a detective. So chances are his challenges will be different than someone in a patrol car. I'm just wondering why you decided to build those two together.
Part of the story, it's been kind of rumbling around in my head for many years while I was still working in the state prison system. And a couple of things happened while I was working that kind of, it really was the catalyst for the story. One was we had a guy that we worked with, one of our colleagues, who had a son who needed a bone marrow transplant. And we all, you know, donated you know, our blood samples and got on the registry and all that kind of thing. And the kid ended up getting a match, and, you know, things worked out well. And then not long after that, I was working in a maximum security prison in the security housing unit. And that's kind of like a prison within a prison where, you know, if you do bad things in a maximum security prison, you get locked up in this security housing unit. And the inmate clientele there is, you know, trying to, you know, hurt staff, hurt inmates, and, you know, we have to wear staff-proof vests and all that kind of thing. And a couple of Aryan Brotherhood members were out on the yard, and they tried attacking another inmate, and the guard and the officer in the tower ended up shooting the Aryan Brotherhood member, and he later died in the hospital. And the first thing we heard was they were going to donate his organs. And it was this weird kind of moment in my head thinking, who would want this guy's organs? I mean, he's filthy. He's nasty. He's just like scum of the earth kind of people. And then I started to think, well, if I had a son or daughter that needed organs, maybe I would make that leap and do that. And that kind of brought the family aspect of the books into the story.
Well, that actually, you mentioned that you were a guard at a maximum security prison, and it occurred to me that, you know, writers come to crime fiction from a lot of directions, you know, journalists, lawyers, police officers, and your experience in law enforcement as a prison guard, I think, is maybe you're the first author who was a prison guard that I've read. And so it was that particular incident in your professional life that opened the door to a life of crime fiction.
A life of crime. I'm glad you added fiction. You know, there's been a number of events and incidents that you know, we've lived through in the prison system. But I've always been a voracious reader ever since I was a little kid. I remember reading, you know, getting caught up in reading Bram Stoker, and the library bell went off and scared the crap out of me. But, you know, I've always been involved in that kind of stuff. And then when I was getting close to retirement, it was like, you know, I've always wanted to try my hand at writing, but I never really had the time to devote to it until after I left the Department of Corrections. So it was kind of just a perfect storm that came together to allow me to do it, and I've loved every minute of it.
You were a voracious reader, and I'm wondering if you read a lot of crime fiction in addition to Bram Stoker. If so, who did you like to read, and who influenced you? And those aren't necessarily the same people.
Sure. I think some of the earlier influences that I remember reading were, you know, Raymond Chandler, of course, and then Elmore Leonard. I just loved his work. Michael Conley, more recently, I just couldn't get enough of his stuff. But there are so many good crime writers that it's just fun to pick up one of the people that you meet at a conference, and you can read their work, and it's just like, God, I know this person. It's really cool.
And now there's one more really good crime writer, you.
Well, thank you, Nancy.
In your book, this is something I found really interesting. I've read a lot of crime fiction. I've certainly read Michael Conley, who is, I like to think of as Saint Michael. And there's, in your book, there's the clashing agenda of city government and the police department. And I think to an outsider like me, you know, who is neither in city government nor a police force, it seems like the agendas should be one and the same, but that's not the case, is it?
In my experience, it's often not the case. When I was the director of parole here in California, We had to deal with city governments on regular occasions to, you know, put out different public safety programs throughout the state. And the police department or the sheriff's department would have a very clear agenda of public safety and how they wanted to go about and do it. But the political arm of the county or the city was often a little bit more interested in how is this going to affect my next, you know, reelection bid, and what's the media going to look at this and say, you know, that kind of thing. So there's more interest in appearances than actual, you know, public safety impact.
And so all of these things came together in your head, and you you have this John Penley, you have this character, you have him with his new partner, Paula, and these threads are starting to come together. And I think as a debut novelist, it's interesting to talk about your process. Did you go to conferences? Did you go to extension courses at colleges? What, you know, the hardest thing is that blank page on the computer screen, if you did indeed write on a computer, most people do, to write those first words. So what steps did you take?
I did go to conferences. I attended a couple of the Book Passage Mystery Writers conferences there in Marin County. Just great information there. But some of the influence in my writing process happened while I was working as a probation officer years ago, where you would do pre-sentence reports, and as part of that process, you had to write out a description of the crime. And, you know, the defendant's version of it and the police version of it. So it was kind of, and looking back at it, it was kind of like a precursor to writing out a crime story from, you know, true life events. And I think that's helped me in describing, you know, some of the procedural aspects of the story and how the different agencies interact. I think that's helped.
Right. One thing I appreciated about your book was the ambiguity. You had some bad guys doing their best to do something good, and albeit in a kind of strange way. And you had some good guys doing bad things, usually right, motivated by self-interest. So
sure.
Was it difficult to integrate? I mean, you know, you were a law enforcement professional. Was it difficult to integrate that ambiguity into your characters, or did it, based on what you just told me about being a parole officer, did it come pretty easily?
Yeah, I think it. I don't know about easily, but it just came naturally. In that, that's how, you know, we saw real life. I mean, there aren't these distinct boundaries of good and evil and black and white, and there's a lot of, especially on the street, there's a lot of gray area that people operate in on both sides. And I think to try to capture some of that is a story, a little dose of reality that I think it helps the story.
Well, I agree. I mean, I think ambiguity rings true, and I think when people talk about the evolution of crime fiction, one of the things that has evolved is the introduction of that ambiguity, which just, as you said, it just rings true.
True.
When we left John Penley, you know, the story didn't seem to be over. So I was wondering if we're going to have another John Penley story, and if you can talk about that at all.
Sure. Yeah, actually, Crooked Lane Books, the publisher that I'm really lucky to be paired up with, we signed a 2-book contract, and the second Penley mystery is in the pipeline now. I've completed that, and it's out of my hands into the capable hands of Crooked Lane folks. So yeah, you're going to see a new one, and this one brings Paula out a little bit more. In kind of a case from her past comes to haunt her.
Was it the case that was referred to of, you know, she, I don't think it ruins the story to say that she was with Internal Affairs before she became John Penley's partner. And one of the things she did was report evidence tampering, which was kind of her job to do.
Yeah, right.
And yet, you know, I think police departments everywhere have a conflicted relationship with their internal affairs departments because they're the ones that are policing the police. So is that the case or is it another one?
It talks about that case, but it's a different one that takes on a whole, I can basically say a drug task force goes bad, and Paula's in the middle of that investigation from her past.
You know, I was also interested in the setting. I know that you you live in Sacramento, correct?
Yeah, just outside.
And you know, a lot of California-based crime fiction is set in Los Angeles and San Francisco. And once again, I couldn't think of another series or book that I had read that was set in Sacramento, and it's an unusual city, Sacramento.
It is. It's an unusual city, and yeah, I couldn't hope to, you know, recreate the kind of L.A. scene that Michael Conley has developed in his books, but Sacramento to me is kind of like a microcosm of a big city problems in a small, medium city package. It's very vanilla in terms of everything happens here, but it seems to be concentrated. So what you see a lot of. So it's, you know, it's got the political influences of the state capital. It's got the crime, the city crime. You've got the human trafficking networks that run in and out of the city. There's a lot of action here, and it's something that, you know, I'm familiar with the area, so that helps. But it's also close to being vanilla enough where anybody can picture that city as their city, and that kind of thing can happen in my hometown kind of thing.
Right, even though it's the state capital of the largest population state, at least, in the country.
Right.
I've always found Sacramento very fascinating. You know, I live in Los Angeles. It's the biggest city in the state. And to me, Sacramento is like all politics.
And a lot of politics.
And exactly. And I mean, you hear politics being discussed at restaurants and you know, state politics. And that is, I think that makes it interesting. And it works its way into the book because it seems like everybody, even tangent, you know, just by on a tangent, has a connection to the state government because it's the sort of the biggest game in town.
It is. That's right.
What else can you tell me about the book? You know, what were your biggest challenges and what you felt were your biggest accomplishments other than writing the words at the end? That's always.
That's always a very good sign. I think some of the interesting things that I had to go through to get the book was, particularly in the medical aspects of it, since we are dealing with the organ transplant system and that kind of thing, were some really awkward conversations with your personal care physician on different drug. What drug would you use to make somebody, you know, have amnesia and... and you get some look from your doctor, like, you know, where is this going to go? But yeah, I found people, particularly some of the surgeons and things, were just really outgoing and willing to talk about organ transplant processes. And you know, the ambulance staff that I talked to were, you know, describing different these very dark pickups that they would make with, you know, no warning, and they just scurry off an ambulance crew in an ambulance to a hospital. And it was really some interesting stuff to research to kind of get that detail for the book. But some of the other things that kind of came together for the book was I'm very lucky to have a really good agent in Liz Crack, and she was really kind of helpful on actually refining some of the drafts before we gave it to Crooked Lane. And I think between that massaging and then what Crooked Lane was able to do working with me, I think we could get up with a pretty good product. I'm happy with it.
No, it was it really, you really have a tough time putting it down. You always want to go to the next chapter because it moves along. The pacing, I found the pacing really compelling, and at no time was I, you know, did my attention wander from the story when I was reading it.
Thank you for that. I appreciate that.
Well, you know, it was, I can't say it was a fun read, because it was pretty scary. You know, when you think about, you know, when you think about someone in a position of having to rely on the sanctity of the organ transplant system, that's, you know, like you said, it's all about trust and that leap of faith that you have to make in other people. And that's something that I think Detective Penley has a hard time doing just by who he is and what he does for a living. He's a skeptic.
That's right. Yeah, right. Exactly so.
Well, my last question is usually, has there been interest from Hollywood yet?
No, I know that our agent has sent out a few queries to the Hollywood branches of the entertainment industry. That would be awesome to see, but I'm not holding my breath.
It's really been great talking to you, and I just enjoyed the book so much, and one of the things I really like to do is I certainly like to talk to established writers and you know, best-selling authors, but personally, I'm interested in debut authors. I love finding new writers to read because the ones that I already like Lee Child and Michael Conley, can really only write one book a year. So it's great to expand the readership. And I would put your book in the Michael Conley category of procedurals, the way the action drives and the moral questions that he faces. So that's pretty good company, I think.
That's extremely good company. If you'd send a copy of that little video snippet or sound snippet, I'll be glad to post that on my webpage and be very proud of that. Thank you very much, Nancy.
Thanks again for listening to Speaking of Mysteries. This is our last podcast interview for 2016. There are some amazing books coming from both new and veteran authors alike, and I'm looking forward to some great interviews in the new year. Until then, I wish every one of our listeners a Merry Christmas and a Happy New Year.